Following episode of Why We Cook has been brought to you by TechServe. This January, responsibly dispose of your old electronics at one of 10 e-waste recycling events held across four boroughs of New York City, hosted by TechServe and the Lower East Side Ecology Center. Computers, printers, monitors, and lots of other electronics are being accepted for safe and proper recycling. Visit techserve.com/recycling for more information and drop off location details.
Listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Welcome to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. I'm Erica Wides, your host, Chef Smarty Pants. And hopefully you're listening live tonight on heritageradionetwork.com. But if you're listening in the future, it's nice to know that I can hear you listening in the future. Okay, here's the quiz of the week. We're going to do this from now on. We're going to start the show with a quiz. And I'm going to try to figure out some way for you to answer. Send in an answer, something like that. I haven't worked it out yet, but here's your quiz of the week. Ready? What has more sugar? A cup of Raisin Bran or a cup of Cocoa Puffs? Think about it. What has more sugar? A cup of Raisin Bran or a cup of Cocoa Puffs? I'm going to give you the answer in the third segment of the show, so you're going to have to wait to find out. You could probably figure it out. Just think about it, but it's a good one. So anyway, we are about to get slammed with another storm here in New York, or so they're predicting. I think it's going to be kind of a big fake out, but who knows? We already had our snowpocalypse one for the year, and I'm sick of it. I'm over it, but they say we're going to get another one. I've heard estimates anywhere from 2 inches to 4 feet. My job already closed for tomorrow. Like, they canceled classes where I teach already. Like, today at noon, they canceled for tomorrow. So I'm off tomorrow. I have a day off. So that left me thinking, well, I have the whole day off. What should I do? And I had actually gotten an email yesterday from the Martha Stewart show, the TV show, saying, we're anticipating our audience not showing up because of the snow. Do you want tickets to the Martha Stewart show? So I thought, yeah, sure, that'll be fun. I can schlep in on the subway. So I responded and I said yes, but I never heard back from them. So I don't know if I'm going to the Martha Stewart show tomorrow or not to be in the audience. So I was like, well, what else am I going to do? I have the whole day off. I don't have to teach. I mean, I can certainly do a lot of stuff around the house, things I need to get done. There's writing I want to do. But maybe I'll cook. There's a novel idea for me. I never cook. Maybe I'll cook something. And it's a storm. It's a blizzard. So that's when you're supposed to make soup. You make soup in storms. That's how it works. That's the rule. And it's not that I don't cook much at home. But, you know, I teach in a culinary school. I'm surrounded by food all day. I don't actually cook at work either. I just watch other people cook. Teach them how to cook. So when I get the chance at home, I do cook. I like to cook. But not so often. So if you were listening last week, you may remember that I had gone out to Portland for the holidays, and we went to the Bob's Red Mill store, Bob's Red Mill grain and bean mecca heaven store, and we brought back a lot of soup mix, the mixed bean soup. It's got like 47 beans in it or something like that, 20, 14, I don't know, a lot of beans. More beans than you could probably name. That's how many beans. And we've been eating bean soup now for 2 weeks straight. And I'm a little beaned out. I've sort of hit my saturation point with beans. And so I'm not going to make another bean soup. But we still have some in the fridge. I'm still eating it. And yesterday in class, we were doing this lesson we do where we do a menu from Danielle Belude. And Danielle Belude makes this soup from sunchokes, you know, sunchokes, Jerusalem artichokes. I think I did a show on them a while ago. I must have. And it's like a puree sunchoke soup with little sagey croutons. And it's delicious. It's like one of the best soups I've ever eaten. And it's sunchoke season right now. And They're really good. But that's a puree soup. I don't want to do a puree soup either. No beans, no purees. I don't want anything thick. I think what I'm looking for here is broth. I want a brothy soup, something watery and brothy. Not watery, but, you know, brothy. I want liquid. My husband always says that the soups I made should actually be called thicks, not soups, because for obvious reasons, they're never brothy enough, and he's always just craving a brothy soup. So I want to make sort of like a grandma-style chicken soup, if your grandma made chicken soup. Probably not. Maybe your great-grandma made chicken soup. My grandma made really good chicken soup with matzo balls, and I thought she was a fantastic cook until my mother broke the news to me when I was in college that she used to actually buy everything pre-made from Empire Kosher in the supermarket at Walbaum's. So that was kind of a shattering blow to my image of her. She actually couldn't cook at all. She was just really good at reheating. But that was really good soup. And that's what I wanted to make, was a really simple, delicious chicken soup. Just chickeny and with some chicken fat floating on top and some carrots. And that's what I want to make. So I thought that's what we would talk about tonight, how to do that. Because they're really easy to make. A delicious, simple chicken soup is easy to make, but it's hard to find. Think of a place where you can go to get a good bowl of chicken soup. It's hard to find. Some of those Ukrainian places in the East Village, they have good soup, but I don't want to schlep over there. I live in Brooklyn. And it's, you know, when I'm sick in the winter, if I have a sore throat, if I'm just feeling blah, if I have the midwinter blahs, which I think I have now, although we're not even in midwinter yet, that's what I want. And every time I make it, it's so good that I eat it all before I remember to freeze any of it for the next time. So last weekend, while I was making my current batch of bean soup, I also took a chicken out of the freezer that I had. I had gotten these really good organic chickens at Costco, and I thawed one of those out, and I threw it in, and I roasted a chicken, and my friend came over, and we watched 6 back-to-back episodes of Mad Men Season 4, because she hadn't watched them yet, while the chicken roasted. And then we had that chicken with our bean soup over the weekend, and it was a really good chicken, and we're almost done. And as I was carving it, I thought, I'm going to save the carcass from this, the bones, because I'm going to make myself some chicken soup this week. Now, when you make a chicken soup, what you want to start out with is chicken stock. And normally you make chicken stocks out of raw chicken bones. But you can also make a stock from a cooked carcass. That's okay. It's not technically really like a stock. It's more like a broth. But it's still good. It's just, it's not going to be gelatinous like a true chicken stock because the bones are already cooked. But it still makes a really flavorful soup. It's going to give you a lot of flavor. It's just not going to give you the kind of viscosity you'd want from a stock if you were going to use that stock to make sauces where you'd be boiling it down. But that's not my goal. I want to make soup. If you want to make a gelatinous chicken stock, you have to use raw bones because the raw bones are still full of collagen. Collagen is what is in the bones. And when you heat up the collagen in water, the collagen dissolves and turns into gelatin. And that's what gives viscosity to stocks and sauces. And I've done shows and shows on this. So you should know this by now if you've been listening all along. But it's always good to have a little refresher course. You know, a little tutorial. But anyway, cooked bones won't do that as much in your soup because they've already been cooked. And so it's hard for that collagen to dissolve out into the liquid. Plus, you won't extract as much flavor from the bones. But you'll still get a really nice roasted chickeny flavor in your stock. So you can do it. So you carve up your roasted chicken and you save those bones and the wings and the bits that you didn't eat. And you just take all that and you put it in a pot. Now, if you have wings or other parts that still have a lot of meat on them, save those. Don't put those in the stock because you're going to want to add them later to the soup. This is a two-step process. You need to commit some time to this. I know we like things to be instant. This is not like tweeting a recipe. This is like reading a book about a recipe. Okay? Think back like 15 years when you would actually sit down and do something for more than 20 seconds. This is what this is about. It's simple, but it takes time. Two-step process. You're going to make the stock, then you're going to make the soup. Okay, you can check your Facebook page in between or, you know, tweet or something like that. So you're just going to take that pile of cooked bones and take off any extra skin because you don't want too much fat floating on top and put it in a big pot and add cold water to cover it. Make sure you're using cold water in this, okay? Not hot. You want to start with cold water. Put it all in the pot, put it on the stove, and bring it up to a simmer. Don't bring it up to a rapid boil, because what you want to happen is you want the water to slowly heat up and slowly heat up the bones and render out the fat and dissolve some of the proteins and the blood that's still in the bones. And that's all going to float to the surface. If you bring it up to a boil, that's all going to like roll back in and reincorporate, and you don't want that. So bring it up nice and slow. And when the top of the pot is covered with scum, which is the technical term, scum, and fat, then turn down the heat and skim it. Okay, that's your first step. You'll notice that all we put in the pot was the bones. There's nothing else in there yet. That is your first step. Okay? And remember that you're saving any parts that have meat on them, wings or a leg or something. Save those on the side. Okay. You've skimmed. Now we have to take a break. We'll be right back. Hey. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by TechServe. Welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef's Marty Pants radio show on heritageradionetwork.com. I'm Erica Wides, your host. I am Chef's Marty Pants. Anyway, we're talking about chicken soup because there's a big storm coming here to New York and everybody's freaking out. The grocery stores have been stripped bare of all their food and everyone's in a panic because we're going to get 6 inches of snow. So you're all going to stay home tomorrow and you're going to make soup. You're going to make grandma style chicken soup. Okay, so if you don't have a chicken already roasting in the oven, you have to go out and get one now. Okay, so in the first segment, we already covered getting those bones in the pot and bringing it up to simmer, and you skimmed. Now you've skimmed. Now you need to add your mirepoix. Yes, mirepoix. You know what that is? Mirepoix. M-I-R-E-P-O-I-X. Years ago, I taught in a school for ex-cons and drug addicts who we were trying to rehabilitate and put them into the culinary industry, because that's what we need, more of those in the business. And this one guy used to say mirepoix, which was funny. Oh, there was like a little laugh track in the background there coming from outside. That was good timing. Anyway, mirepoix is just a mixture of onions, carrots, and celery. Traditionally, it's 50% onions to 25% each carrots and celery. You don't have to be so precise, so accurate, but you certainly could follow the rules there. And you can just do it by volume or by weight or by eye. It's really not such a big deal. But if you put in way more celery than you should, your soup will certainly taste more like celery. It'll taste, you know, like V8, which to me just tastes like celery. I would go heavy on the onions and the carrots and a little lighter on the celery. But you don't have to use those. You can do a white mirepoix. Sometimes we do white mirepoix, so instead of carrots, we use parsnips, so we don't add any color. Like if you make a fish stock, often you do a white mirepoix because you don't want it to turn yellow from the carrots. But when you do a chicken stock, you want it to turn yellow because people associate yellow with chicken, and so you use more carrots. See? But you can use parsnips. You could use fennel fronds if you had those. You could use leeks, shallots, really any aromatic vegetable. You just want to avoid sulfurous vegetables in your mirepoix, so don't put in like broccoli and cabbage and cauliflower and turnips. And you also don't want anything that's so green it's going to turn your stock green. So like I wouldn't put in spinach. You know, I wouldn't put in anything really green. And don't put in beets, obviously, because then you'll get pink soup, which can be nice, but it's not what we're looking for. So anyway, after that initial simmer, put in your mirepoix that you chop up. Do kind of a rough chop. Bring it back to a simmer. Again, remember, no boiling. Just bring it to a simmer and then skim it, because there'll be more scum, and then simmer. Simmer, simmer, simmer. Then you want to put in some herbs. You definitely want something aromatic in there. Now, the choice of herb you put in depends on what you want your finished product to taste like. If you stick with things like parsley and thyme, you'll wind up with sort of a classic neutral Frenchy kind of stock. If you put in anything like sage or rosemary, you're going to veer off into Italy a little bit. which is perfectly fine, but that's what your soup will taste like. You could go the ginger, garlic, scallions route and do more of like a Chinese style soup. If you wanted to make it taste more like pho, like if you like Vietnamese pho, you know, pho, Vietnamese soup, you would throw in a couple of cloves and some star anise, maybe. That would give you more pho and a big piece of ginger too. So this is where you decide, like, what direction am I going in flavor wise? But I'm going to say, let's just stay in Europe. Okay, because we're honoring my grandmother who used to buy her soup from Empire Kosher, but her parents came from Eastern Europe. So we're going to stick with Europe. So I'm going to say let's put in like some parsley stems and a few bay leaves and some peppercorns. Nothing too wacky. Maybe a little dried thyme. But I don't think my grandmother even ever saw dried thyme in her house. I don't think they sold it at Walbaum's in the 70s. And remember that this is just a stock. We're not making the soup yet. So don't waste your good whole product on this. Use your trimmings and bits for it. Now, in your mirepoix, use whole product. Use whole carrots, whole onions. But the celery could be all the leaves, the tops. Okay? But don't put peels in. Sometimes people put peels in their stock, and that's disgusting because the peels are garbage. Put them in your compost. Feed them to your pigs. Don't put them in your soup. Okay? If you're not going to eat it, don't put it in your soup stock. Okay, I have to draw the line somewhere. I was looking at some site online today. Somebody was talking about making stock. And he was like, yeah, save up all your little bits of old broccoli and cauliflower and put your eggshells in there too. Dude, I'm not putting eggshells in my stock unless I'm making consommé. And that's a different story completely. And we're not going there. Certainly no broccoli and cauliflower in there. Okay, but anyway, since we started making this stock with cooked chicken bones, we don't have to cook it for as long. Now, if we were making like restaurant chicken stock, you know, with raw bones, we would simmer for like 6 hours. It's like a 4 to 6 hour process. You really need to commit. If we were making veal stock, it would be like 8 to 12 hours. Ridiculous. Overnight. But we're really just making a simple cooked broth out of an old chicken carcass. So I'm going to say like an hour, 2 hours max. If you go too much longer, you're going to have to start adding more liquid because you're going to evaporate out. So cook it until all those vegetables are nice and soft. Then you're going to strain and you're going to throw away all that stuff that you strain out. I know it seems like a waste, but you're going to start over again with new vegetables in the second step. Okay, so strain it all out. Save the liquid. Throw away the solids. Sometimes people get confused there. You actually want to save the liquid. The solids go in the trash or in the compost. Clean out the pot. Chop up a whole bunch of new vegetables. Now, this is where you can add the creative stuff. You can use mirepoix, but you could also use some of that other stuff. Parsnips, rutabagas, celery root, turnips. Any interesting vegetable can go in there now. You could also do bok choy, spinach, ginger scallion if you want to go a little more Chinese, something like that. Reheat the stock and put the firmest, hardest vegetables in there first because you want them to cook the longest. Don't just dump everything in the pot willy-nilly at once because vegetables all cook at different rates and you want everything to be cooked evenly. So if you just chopped a whole bunch of different stuff up there and dumped it in there, you would have a big mess at the end because things cook at different rates. You have to give each vegetable its time, its allotted time and space. So put the hard stuff in there first. Carrots, the parsnips, rutabagas, whatever. They go in first. Let them get sort of tender. Then you can add celery. You can add onions. You can add the softer stuff a little bit later on. And let that all simmer till all those are soft. Then, remember those chicken parts that we were saving? Get those chicken parts. Throw those in. So if you have like some wings or a leg or something, put those in. Simmer those till they're soft. And then take them out. Pull off the meat. Throw the meat back in. Get rid of the bones. I know this seems a little complicated, but it's really not. Trust me, people have been making this for thousands of years. It's not that hard. And they still invented the internet and went to the moon. So we can do it. Okay, so basically at this point, your soup is done. Then you can throw in some herbs if you want, some fresh herbs right at the end so they stay fresh. Maybe some chopped parsley, some fresh herbs, whatever you've got, a little mint, I don't know, whatever you feel like, some scallions. And then salt. Don't forget to add salt. Food needs salt to taste good. Salt is what food is all about. If you taste the soup without salt, you're going to think it tastes like total crap. That's because there's no salt in it, and you have to add some. So add a good amount of salt, and don't fear the salt. Salt is not bad for you. We were just talking about this in the control room. People don't have high blood pressure because they have too much salt. They have high blood pressure because they don't eat enough potassium. It's not too much salt. It's not enough potassium. So go out and eat a banana and some beans and you'll be fine. Stop eating the KFC, basically. Okay, so season it up. Sometimes if you're going to go Asian, you could float a little sesame oil on top. That's nice. Or put some chili flakes in there. Whatever you want to do. Basically, you're making like this template chicken soup, and then you can overlay onto it whatever kind of soup projection fantasy you want to have. It's like the blank slate of soups, and you can then take it and run and go in any soup direction you want to go into. And that's it, really. I mean, it's that simple. That's how you do it. Does that seem simple or does that seem complicated? See, to me, it's like, oh yeah, that's so simple. But for some people, I don't know, maybe they'd be overwhelmed by that. I think you can do it. And there's really no excuse, right? You can do it. Especially tomorrow if you don't have to go to work. What are you going to do? Sit around all day on Facebook? That's probably what I'll do, but I'll pull myself away for a moment. And if you were listening last week, you'll remember that I declared it the year of the vegetable. The guy from, what was it? From the Burpee Seed Company said it was the year of the vegetable. So I reiterated that. It's the year of the vegetable. So what I would do with this soup then is as I'm heating it up to serve it, right before I put it in the bowl, I would take a giant pile of spinach or maybe baby arugula or bok choy and throw it in the pot and just let it wilt. Don't let it really cook. Just let the heat wilt the greens down and then serve it up right away. And then you get a big pile of vegetables into you at the same time. But they've wilted down so much that it just seems like not a huge pile of vegetables. And you won't even realize how many vegetables you're eating in that one bowl of soup. That way you can cram a lot of vegetables into you all at once, which is really what it's about. And you can do that if you just plan things out a little bit. We're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, the answer to the quiz. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by TechServe. Welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. So we started off the show tonight with a little quiz. And I want to give you the answer to that quiz. But actually, I just remembered something before we get to that. So we've been talking about this chicken soup, you know, how to make your basic grandma style classic chicken soup. And you know how much I love eggs. I'm sure if you've been listening to the show, you've gotten a sense of that I love eggs. But I only buy good eggs. I buy pastured eggs from the farmer's market. And I eat probably an egg a day most days. Like, I would say, I'm going to say 4 out of 7 days of the week I have an egg in some form for breakfast. Like this morning I had quinoa and I put an egg in it. And then I put a big handful of baby arugula on top to wilt. I like arugula, too. So right there, see? Vegetables for breakfast. Now, you could take this chicken soup that we were talking about, and once you have it nice and hot, break an egg into it and poach the egg right in the soup. And that is so good because the egg just cooks really gently in the soup, and then you just break the yolk, and it just, like, oozes out into the soup. Or you can scramble the egg up a little bit first. And then as the soup is hot in the pot, drizzle the scrambled egg in and you get like an egg drop thing. You get stracciatella, which is like the Italian version of that. And then add some grated Parmesan cheese and that's really, really freaking good. That's what I'm going to do tonight when I get home. Anyway, back to the quiz, because we don't have that much time. So the question was, what has more sugar? A cup of Raisin Bran or a cup of Cocoa Puffs? So what do you think it is? Well, the answer is the Raisin Bran has more sugar. There are 17 grams of sugar in one cup of Raisin Bran, which is 3 grams more than a cup of Cocoa Puffs. Cocoa Puffs. Is that what you thought? The sugar in Raisin Bran comes from, obviously, from the raisins, which are high in sugar. But those raisins, do you ever look at them? They're coated in like a white dust. Yeah, that white dust is sugar. They coat the raisins in that to keep them soft in the box so they don't dry out if that box of Raisin Bran sits on the shelf for a while. So the raisins themselves are full of sugar, natural sugars, and then they coat the raisins in sugar too, and that's why you have 17 grams of sugar in one cup of cereal. That is a lot of sugar in one cup of breakfast cereal. Now, at least the Raisin Bran has bran in it. It's a whole grain cereal, whereas Cocoa Puffs are basically made from white flour and white sugar and artificial cocoa flavor. That's why it's spelled C-O-C-O. There's no A on the end. Actually, I don't know if that's true. There may be real cocoa in that. I'm not going to say that, you know. I don't want Kellogg's to come after me or whoever it is makes Cocoa Puffs, but I certainly don't eat them. I stay away from them. If I want chocolate, I'm going to eat real chocolate. I'm not going to eat some bowl of crap for breakfast. Anyway, I wonder if you got that right or not. I think most people would probably answer the Cocoa Puffs, just assuming it's like a junkier cereal, because Raisin Bran has what I call like a health halo. People go, oh, it's Raisin Bran, it's better. It's raisins, it's bran, it's healthy. Health halos.
Hey, Erica, it's Jack.
Hi.
There's processed cocoa in Cocoa
Really?
Puffs.
You looked it up?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Kellogg's or whoever. Processed cocoa in Cocoa Puffs. But Jack, did you get the answer? Which one did you think it was?
I thought it was Raisin Bran.
Oh, you did. You got it right. Okay. Good job, Jack. It's because you've been listening to all these shows. Anyway, that was Jack. That wasn't God speaking up, by the way. Although he's kind of the god of radio around here. All right, we only have 2 more minutes. Here's one more for you to think about. Which one has more calories? A peanut chocolate chip Clif Bar or a Snickers bar? Peanut chocolate chip Clif Bar or a Snickers bar? Which one has more calories? Well, it's actually kind of a trick question because they have the same amount. And a Snickers bar has 28 grams of sugar, whereas Clif Bar has 21, which isn't much less, really. So basically, Clif Bars, protein bars, things like that, they're really just candy bars, and they add in whey protein to it, powdered milk whey protein, so that you get this sense that you're eating something that's a little bit better for you. And then they throw in some synthetic vitamins and things, too, just to kind of pump up the profile. It's just something to think about. You're really better off just eating like a handful of almonds and, you know, a few dried apricots or something. But anyway, I hope you'll enjoy your day off tomorrow if you have it, if you get the snow day. Stay home, make some soup, perhaps. Try not to eat Cocoa Puffs. If you have them, maybe you could use them to sprinkle on the sidewalk instead of putting rock salt down to keep the ice from making you fall down. I think that would work because they're kind of gritty. Anyway, we're just about out of time. So enjoy the snow and we'll see you next week.